It is Friday, May the 18th. This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us. Coming up, some say the Kim-Trump summit might not happen.
President Trump still has decisive leverage here to call off the meeting if he would like.
Could President Trump be indicted in the Russia probe?
Nobody is really sure whether, in fact, it's correct that a sitting president cannot be indicted.
Also ahead, a royal wedding in Britain, what's trending on social media, and some sounds from the world of music. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. President Trump predicts North Korea would be very rich, in his words, and he is promising the Kim family dynasty, in his words again, very adequate protection to stay in power if he agrees to give up its nuclear weapons. If leader Kim Jong-un does not agree to such a deal, however, Mr. Trump is warning the impoverished nation faces being decimated. The president surmised a change of tone this week by the North Koreans about the planned Trump-Kim summit on the 12th of June. That'll be in Singapore. Could be the result of recent second meeting between Mr. Kim and Chinese President Xi Jinping. President Trump on that summit with Mr. Kim.
We'll see what happens. We are dealing with them now. We may have the meeting. We may not have the meeting. If we don't have it, that will be very interesting. We'll see what happens.
VOA's Victor Beatty asked James Kim, a research fellow at the Seoul-based Asan Institute for Policy Studies, if he thinks the Kim-Trump summit will happen next month.
I believe the official position of the United States is the only thing that we can go with at the moment. And North Korea has never issued an official statement that the talks are off. So everything's a green light and on the go as far as we're concerned, unless things change between now and June 12th.
Well, China has indicated that it wants the talks to go on. Will that help North Korea make up its mind?
I don't think there's a very big change here on the part of North Korea. The latest statement was largely directed towards National Security Advisor John Bolton and his statements. Any action that North Korea has taken was directed at towards South Korean government more so than it was towards the United States. So nothing suggests to me that the talks are off at this moment.
Were you surprised that North Korea canceled the high-level talks with South Korea?
No, this is par for the course for North Korea. We've seen these kinds of moves before. What surprised me was the response from the United States. It was more subdued than I expected.
Why do you say that?
This meeting was made possible by President Trump agreeing to the meeting. President Trump still has the decisive leverage here to call off the meeting if he would like. But the fact that he didn't make any signals or respond in any way to the latest statement suggests to me that he wants to move ahead with this talk just as much as South Korean President Moon Jae-in would also like this talk to move forward.
That is James Kim. He is a research fellow at the Seoul-based Asan Institute for Policy Studies. He was speaking with VOA's Victor Beatty. On the first anniversary of Special Counsel Robert Mueller's Russia investigation beginning, President Trump is making his frustration known. AP's Sagar Magani at the White House.
The president's calling the probe disgusting, illegal, and unwarranted, tweeting, "Congratulations, America. We are now into the second year of the greatest witch hunt in American history." On the Senate floor,
"It's not a witch hunt when 17 Russians have been indicted. It's not a witch hunt when some of the most senior members of the Trump campaign have been indicted."
Democratic leader Chuck Schumer says the president seems afraid of what the probe will find. On the other side, House Speaker Paul Ryan says Special Counsel Bob Mueller should be free to finish his job quickly.
"It's been a year. My guess is he's probably coming to a conclusion."
Sagar Magani at the White House.
And some think that Mueller's conclusion might lead to an indictment of President Trump for being a part of the Russia interference in the 2016 U.S. election in which he was elected president. And others believe Mr. Trump knowingly colluded with the Russians and later lied about his involvement. For some insight into whether President Trump can be indicted as part of the Russia probe, VOA's Lori London speaks with New York-based criminal defense attorney Kenneth Perry. Here's Lori London.
Rudy Giuliani, who says that the special counsel's office told him that the president cannot be indicted. So basically sort of implying that maybe this is all just for naught. Is that accurate? And if so, what does that mean?
Well, I mean, first of all, I take with a certain grain of salt that Mueller would have told him anything at this point along the line. That's not normally what a prosecutor would do. But even if you assume that Mueller has taken that tack, nobody is really sure whether, in fact, it's correct that a sitting president cannot be indicted. There are a host of different interpretations of the different parts of the Constitution that those who say he cannot be will point to. As I read those sections, including the section where they define what impeachment is, which is one of the main parts of the Constitution that they point to, that looks more to me like a limitation on the powers of Congress than it is on the limitations of the judiciary. And one of the reasons I say that, of course, is because the Founding Fathers were really into the separation of powers. I mean, they had the three co-equal branches. So when they define what an impeachment is, that does not mean that the other branch, the judicial branch, doesn't have sway over bad acts.
It also sort of seemed that in that implication that Julie mentioned that because the president cannot be indicted, according to him, that he can also not face a subpoena.
Yeah, I don't know where that comes from. That is a real stretch. You know, their whole argument there is that it takes away from the president and his important duties. No man is above the law. I think what they're doing is you know, they're trying to muddy the water as much as they can. They're trying to use that advisory opinion from the legal office of justice to use that to buttress their argument. But that's only an opinion. It's like I'm a law. If I'm the chief legal officer for a corporation and I want to say, well, this is the law, mm-hmm, that doesn't mean it is. And we all know, look, law firms, lawyers are wrong half the time because they always have one side winning, the other side losing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like the Justice Department hasn't had their opinions of what the law is and have had them shot down by the courts. So whether Mueller decides not to indict, much like Starr did and, you know, back with Clinton, that was more the way I've read it as a personal opinion, because there were memos out by both the special prosecutor with Nixon and a special prosecutor with Clinton saying that, in fact, the president can be indicted.
What are the other options that the special counsel might have besides indicting a president?
Well, they can send a report to Congress outlining the charges and recommending or suggesting that they do impeachment. They can come out with a finding that there was nothing criminal there or nothing wrong. At this point, none of us really know what he's doing. As we all know, grand juries are secret. And like any good prosecutor who is in the investigatory phase, they're not going to give out that much information. So nobody really knows yet what's going on. All we can do is surmise from what we hear.
As far as this investigation goes, I know the president's talking about how he wants this thing to wrap up. It's distracting. It's not good for the country. And it's a witch hunt. Will that have any influence on how long this does go on? Or do you think that Special Counsel Mueller will continue to carry on for as long as it takes to finish whatever the job is that he feels needs to be done?
I think Mueller will continue as long as it takes to get the job done, provided he's either not fired or for some reason Congress doesn't force his hand. This whole process has become so politicized,
right,
that we don't know what's going to happen.
That's Kenneth Perry. He is a New York-based criminal defense attorney. He was speaking with VOA's Lori London. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. On our next program, we examine U.S. foreign policy under the Trump administration, from reshaping the rules of global trade to exiting the Iran nuclear deal to moving the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem. President Donald Trump's approach to foreign policy often baffles allies and adversaries alike. We'll talk about it with two veteran analysts. That's Encounter this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Music time in Africa. Savor the flavor of African music. Hi, I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in, feast your ears, and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Friday at 0900 and Saturday and Sunday at 0900, 15, 20, and 2200 hours UTC.
This is VOA's International Edition. Britain's Prince Harry, sixth in line to the throne, and American Meghan Markle, best known for her role in the TV drama Suits, are due to marry tomorrow in Windsor, England. For many fans, it is a fairy tale romance as a former American actress becomes a royal, and the marriage also breaks many of the unspoken conventions of the British royal family. Henry Ridgewell, reporting now from London, the day has added significance for many who watched Prince Harry grieve at the funeral of his mother, Princess Diana, 21 years ago, and who cites her as his continuing inspiration for the charitable work he and Meghan will be doing as a couple.
A TV star and activist who has already made her mark on the world, Meghan Markle breaks the mold of the demure princess, says British royal expert Richard Fitzwilliams.
Meghan is an American biracial divorcee who's an activist, a feminist, and a former actress. Those were credentials that might well have barred her from marrying a senior member of the royal family only a relatively short time ago. Now they're being positively welcomed.
Welcomed into a British royal family that still elicits fascination around the world. Markle's activism mirrors the charitable work of her future husband.
In Rwanda and India and also the United Nations for female empowerment, she's been an activist for much of her life. This is taking the world to a new level and she can lobby at the very top.
But that lobbying has a limit. Some fear Markle's outspoken nature may not go down well in the gilded corridors of a royal dynasty where politics is taboo.
The royal family does things quietly with dignity, and that's what we count on them for. So it's going to be very, I think, difficult for her to really curtail her activism. And we've seen a few stumbles here and there as she's been acclimating to royal life.
The couple met in 2016 and announced their engagement last November.
It's a standard, typical night
it's
for us.
It's a cosy night. What were we doing? Just roasting chicken
roasting
and having
trying to roast a chicken,
and it was just an amazing surprise. It was so sweet and natural and very romantic. He got on one knee.
For Britons, the wedding of Prince Harry will mark a particularly happy milestone.
This will be the royal wild child who has developed perhaps beyond levels that we thought he would.
The death of Princess Diana in a Paris car crash scarred a nation and deprived two young boys of their devoted mother. In recent years, Harry has described the mental trauma of the funeral.
It was an extraordinary experience. There's no doubt that he's had some deeply troubling times. The army has made him, and also it's very important to remember his commitment to charity.
Those twin passions have seen Prince Harry serve in Afghanistan and champion charitable causes around the world, including the Invictus Games for wounded servicemen and women.
Message? Yeah, from Michelle. How very amusing. So you would like to watch it together?
Yes.
Let's have a look.
Hey, Prince Harry, remember when you told us to bring it at the Invictus Games?
Careful what you wish for.
Oh, really? Please.
Boom.
Behind their transatlantic bond is plenty of compromise.
What we're seeing is quite the change. I mean, she's brought a California lifestyle to Britain. She's slimming him down. She's putting him on shakes, eating less meat. What Brit do you know that doesn't like meat?
The royal wild child tamed by the American star. Millions will tune in for the wedding. Many more will watch with fascination in the coming years as the new royal couple make their way in the world. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
And still ahead on the International Edition program, it's the sounds of Willie Nelson.
The news never stops. So keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
And right now it's time for what's trending on social media. Here's VOA's Sarah Williams.
Trending today, hashtag Ebola. The World Health Organization says the outbreak of Ebola in the Democratic Republic of Congo has spread to a city, raising fears of a new epidemic of the deadly virus. Reuters World tweets, just in, Congo Health Minister announces case of Ebola in the northwest city of Mbandaka, which has a population of 1 million. The World Health Organization tweets, a first batch of 4,000 hashtag Ebola vaccine doses just arrived in Kinshasa, Democratic Republic of the Congo. Additional doses should be deployed in the coming days to hashtag DRC. There are ongoing preparations to start the ring vaccination as soon as possible. Dr. Tedros tweets, one new hashtag Ebola case has been confirmed in an urban area of hashtag DRC. This is a concerning development, but we now have better tools than ever before to combat Ebola. WHO is deploying more experts. Together with our partners, we are taking decisive action to stop the outbreak. Vox tweets, it's the first time a vaccine is being used to fight a new outbreak of the deadly virus. It could save lives and prevent another public health nightmare. Also trending is hashtag graduation advice in 5 words. Yes, it's graduation time here in the United States. Throughout the country, many prominent people are invited to give graduates their words of wisdom concerning careers and life in general. But on Twitter, many people are giving short summaries of advice. Scott Williams tweets, it doesn't get any easier. Jay Marie tweets, be prepared for student loans. Millrunner tweets, don't settle for boring jobs. Rose Ghost tweets, add more insulation to basement. And finally, Carrie Teddy tweets, don't take advice from Twitter.
All right, how about that? Thanks, Sarah. VOA's Sarah Williams. This is VOA.
This is BizBeat.
Deep in the desert, Israel's tourism board is advertising the draw of silence and sand, a country where 60% of it is barren. Among the 3.6 million visitors last year, just 5% of them spent time in the desert. Omar Seltzer runs the Happy Glamper company that uses a mobile catering truck.
Solar panel on the top that gives us clean energy for the whole camp.
It's got flowing water, a full kitchen, a refrigerator, USB ports too. For fun, there's trekking out here, rope climbing, llama walking, and star searching. Accommodations are spiffy with lush beds and large lounging areas under a tent. Visitor Felix Keel.
It's interesting to know or to learn about it, how the people are living in this area and not in the cities and stuff like that.
Israel's tourism industry rakes in over $5 billion a year, and tourism officials think there's a lot more money in the desert. For VOA's BizBeat, I'm Philip Alexio.
This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us today. Time now for a little something from the world of music.
A few months ago, I was in London, and when I turned the radio on, I heard a wonderful voice. And I said to my wife, I said, who is that singing? And she said, that's Julio Iglesias, the Spanish singer, who's become one of the most popular stars in the whole world. And I said, how could that be? I've never done a duet with him. No, I'm just kidding. I thought Julio's voice was great. And the story has a happy ending because we really did get together, and here's the result. To all the girls I've loved before, who've traveled in and out my door, I'm glad they came along. I dedicate this song to all the girls I've loved before. To all the girls I once praised, and may I say I heard the best, for helping me to grow, I owe a lot, I know, to all the girls I loved before.
As a songwriter and a performer, Willie Nelson played a vital role in post-rock and roll country music. Although he didn't become a star until the mid-1970s, Nelson spent the 60s writing songs that became hits for stars like Ray Price and Patsy Cline. And when fame hit, everyone wanted to record with Willie, and not the least among them was Julio Iglesias.
My life, who now are someone else's wife. I'm glad they came along. I dedicate this song to all the girls I've loved before.
To All the Girls I've Loved Before was a super hit for Willie Nelson, who was born in 1933 in the hill country of the U.S. state of Texas, where he still lives today. Willie is an accomplished musician, singer, songwriter, author, poet, actor, and activist. Among his causes are promoting the use of biofuels and the legalization of marijuana. And in 2015, Willie Nelson was honored by the U.S. Library of Congress with their Gershwin Prize for Popular Song.
The Gershwin Award is one of the greatest things that's happened to me in my life. And, you know, a lot of things happen in 82 years. But this is one of the best for sure. And I really do appreciate it. Thank all of you for doing it. Thank all the artists. Thank you, folks. Thank you.
Willie Nelson plays a lot of country music, but he's also known for singing songs in a variety of genres, including a tune composed by George and Ira Gershwin for the Broadway musical O.K. in 1926. It's called Someone to Watch Over Me.
There's a somebody I'm longing to see. I hope that she turns out to be someone watch over me. I'm a little lamb who's lost in the wood. I know that I could always be good to one who will watch over her. Please to put on some speed, follow my lead. Oh, how I need someone who'll watch over me.
Willie Nelson remains at the top of the country charts and is immensely popular, still out on the road entertaining his fans. Always on that playlist is On the Road Again, sung here at country music's Grand Ole Opry in the U.S. city of Nashville, Tennessee, the virtual country music capital.
With my friends, and I can't wait to get on the road again. On the road again, going places that I've never been, seeing things that I may never see again. And I can't wait to get on the road again. Everybody sing.
Yeah, everybody sing. I have to tell you, that phrase, on the road again, has made it into the vernacular of everyday life. You hear it all the time. I'm on the road again. I'm coming home. I'm on the road again. Well, anyway, enough of that. Hey, listen, thanks for joining us here on The Voice of America for International Edition. Always good to have you here. Latest world news is coming up shortly, and we hope that you'll stay tuned. For our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Dave Magnus, I'm Steve Norman in Washington. We hope you have a super Friday. Now some more from Willie Nelson.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The illegal trafficking of endangered wildlife has escalated to alarming levels. Animals are being killed at unprecedented rate, not at the hands of small-time poachers, but by well-equipped, well-organized, global criminal networks. Wildlife trafficking is a multi-billion-dollar transnational organized crime activity and a critical conservation issue. It pushes iconic species to the brink of extinction, restricts economic development, threatens security and stability, and undermines the rule of law, said Acting Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary for International Narcotics and Law Enforcement Affairs, Richard Glenn. For these reasons, stopping wildlife trafficking is a priority for the U.S. government. In many respects, wildlife trafficking is not much different from other violent, destructive, bloody, and profitable criminal enterprises. So it makes sense that the Bureau of International Narcotics and Law Enforcement, or INL, with its long experience in countering transnational criminal organizations that traffic in drugs, should play a key role in the development and implementation of anti-wildlife trafficking policies around the world. Indeed, INL has found that the tools and resources developed fighting other forms of trafficking can be applied to the wildlife arena, said Mr. Glenn. Criminal organizations move freely across national borders as they traffic poached wildlife from source countries to buyers all over the world. If these criminals cannot find safe haven for their destructive, bloody activities in one jurisdiction, but are able to in others, then our ability to stop them is greatly diminished, said Mr. Glenn. So the U.S. partners with numerous countries in Africa, Southeast Asia, and Latin America to help improve their enforcement, investigative, prosecutorial, and legislative capacities, and cooperation within and across governments. We are working to build connections between source regions of Africa, Latin America, and Asia for wildlife products with the demand countries. We do this by funding exchange visits and joint trainings to build trust, exchange information, and eventually take down whole networks of traffickers instead of individual poachers, said Acting Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary Glenn. The United States government will continue to lead global efforts to end the gruesome trafficking of elephants, rhinos, and other endangered species. We stand ready to work together with more partner nations in this effort.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
from Washington.